As of right now, we are at war.
How desperate are you? You call on such lost creatures to defend you.
How desperate am I? You threaten my world with war. You steal a force you can't hope to control. You talk about peace and you kill because it's fun. You have made me very desperate. You might not be glad that you did. There was an idea. Bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they can become something more. Like the battles that we never could.
Welcome to Fury's Finest, a podcast devoted to discussion of Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. My name is Jesse Agin, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Bruffett. How are you doing today, Chris?
Jesse, I'm doing good. It's a rare daytime recording for us. I love it. Yeah, we're off the heels of the Fury Open, which was fantastic. You know, I expect that we'll have some huge news soon, starting to get leaks on Sabretooth and Wolverine, on the terrain pack, things like that, but no cards yet. We are getting that new affiliation with that, though. Isn't that
kind
neat?
Of amazing? Yeah, seems right up our alley, right, Chris?
Well, yeah, and it just brings up so many questions on whether this is going to be like a Winter Guard scenario where it's like, yeah, this is the team and you've maybe got
four or five
models to pick from, you know, one of those teams that's maybe a splash affiliation type things, or is it going to get fleshed out? You just don't know. Is Laura going to be on that team? Is Domino going to be on that team?
It's classic Captain America. Yeah.
Yeah. Just
our
all
new
kinds.
Cap.
Omega Red, even to a degree. No, take that back.
They've done crazier things in the game, Chris.
Yeah.
Adding people on affiliation lists. We're tiptoeing around it because we're so excited about it. And we saw it on the list of contents of the Weapon X Bunker terrain pack. But that, of course, is the Weapon X affiliation card is listed on that pack. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We know who's Weapon X in the game currently, like the obvious ones. But yeah, it gets more interesting outside of like things like, does Classic Cap fit in there and stuff? I would love that so much. But time will tell.
You know, I'm excited about all the C-list characters.
Yeah, that Weapon Plus
get.
Stuff. Yeah. Mm. So, oh, yeah, it's really exciting. And it's just, it's fun for Chris and I here because we are such big fans of these characters and Weapon X in particular. So, kind of amazing. They're going to add a sub-faction. But I think you're right, Chris. I think it might be a Wakanda Winter Guard type situation where it's just a smaller team, and that's okay, because if you're already like a main X-Men player like I am or something, how cool would it be to have a little tiny splash of Weapon X in there, because you're already bringing said models in Weapon X potentially, right? And you can have a little sub faction within your primary faction of your 10 character roster. Time will tell.
That's a very Jesse thing. I like to kind of run one faction,
mm-hmm.
period, maybe two different leaderships of that faction, maybe. But yeah,
I think that's what this would be.
Jesse's all about that Avengers with both Captain America's and Splash Wakanda, because Black Panther's also in your Avengers list. You know what I mean? You know, just
these
different
are my
possibilities.
Yeah. My tournament lists are always mono faction.
Yes.
Because I have Splash characters for specific roles and specific roles only. So in order to bring in the splash characters, you got to cut those secondary leaders. But
right.
My fun teams, heck yeah, I'm bringing Amazing Spider-Man with Miles, and I'm doing both leaderships. You know, I'm jumping back and forth between games. Also, honorable mention while we're here, Chris, because everyone knows I'm a big terrain guy and a huge Logan fan. What would make this Weapon X terrain box complete? It would be Logan's bike. Logan's bike is in here. We've seen it now. We got a visual confirmation. It's great, too, because weirdly enough, Atomic Mass has not made any motorbikes, motorcycles, choppers, or scooters, or anything like that in the game yet. I think there'd be a nice, smaller than a car terrain piece, you know, kind of flesh out some boards. So I think we're going to see a lot of Logan's bike certain places.
What if it's got a tactics card?
Oh, man. You never know.
What if he's within two of that bike? He can, like, play a tactic card and move long or something.
Yeah, like Ghost Riders, Hell on Wheels. Very good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very exciting. But yeah, we're going to have to hold our breath until we get more information on that. And of course, Pyro and Blob, and which I'm sure will be in the coming future, but we're kind of in Sentinel mode right now, getting ready for that. There's been a lot of news on the Sentinels, crazy stuff that, you know, of course came right after we recorded our episode, but the Sentinels basically have their own version of a mix of field dressing and patch up sort of, which is great. Turning one of the Mark IVs from injured to healthy side, removing all damage. Amazing. The Prime has to pay for it. And then, of course, the Sentinels have their new card, which affiliates someone else on their team with the Sentinels, gives them flight, gives them immunity to bleed, gives them immunity to poison. So turning someone in your team into a cyborg.
Well done. I was wondering how they were going to implement that. And that's just
Borg him
up. such an elegant solution to kind of implement that lore-wise, but also give some flexibility for this team, for this affiliation, so you can actually build lists.
That's absolutely true, Chris. Yeah, I mean, building lists, people are going to really dive in deep now, I imagine, and as they should, because they have more information. But we'll get on more Sentinels in the future when we get more of their content. But today, Chris, we're not doing any of that. So we had just finished our Convocation series, and we kind of bookended it with the Dark Dimension, which was really fun. So we did all the Wizards and ended with Dormammu. And today we're returning back to the Criminal Syndicate. But I say returning back, we're starting a new leadership of the Criminal Syndicate, and we're going to flesh out the rest of our criminals that have come out since we did the early criminals in the early days of Fury's Finest. And that, of course, leads us to start with Shadowland Daredevil, the second leader of the Criminal Syndicate today.
What a leader he is.
Absolutely. So I think we just got to get right to business.
Fury's Finest is supported by Discount Games, Inc. Go to Discount Games, Inc. for all your Marvel Crisis Protocol needs.
Our patrons support Fury's Finest at patreon.com/Fury's Finest. If you enjoy the show, consider supporting us with a monthly contribution and joining our patron Discord. We take this time to thank all of our patrons for their support.
This week, we want to send out a very special thank you to Z10 NATO.
Thanks, buddy.
A ever-present member of the patron Discord. He's always getting those games.
It's impressive.
Always in the Secret Wars League, doing really well. And we could not do this show without the support of individuals like this, Chris.
Thanks, man.
Of course, Chris, we cannot do this show without our Avenger producers, Rusty, Dylan, Nathan, Brian, and Rich. Thank you, Avengers.
Thank you so much.
All right, Chris, let's get over to Shadowland Daredevil lore.
Well, Jesse, since we've got, you know, kind of a character that there's not much on lore wise.
Right. And we got two characters today, which is kind of unique for our lore.
We're going to kind of go ahead and wrap this all into an all around discussion of the Hand and, you know, talk a little bit about the Shadowland Daredevil comic event that really did feature the Beast taking over Matt Murdock's body and leading the Hand in the middle of New York City, imposing martial law. Very interesting concept.
Absolutely.
Some very cool things, but we'll get there.
Yeah, and something I'm really excited about, Chris, is not only are we doing a new leader in the game today and a second leader of the Criminal Syndicate, but we're also doing our first instance of the Grunts. You've already mentioned the Hand, and that's who we're doing. We're doing the Hand Ninja Grunts on top of doing Shadowland Daredevil. So this is going to be a new venture for Fury's Finest where we cover not only the main character, but as Chris said, we're going to focus on what the Grunts are in this universe, what they mean, because turns out, Chris, since this character's come out, we've gotten other characters that have Grunts. So this is going to come up again on our show in the future, and I'm really excited just to talk about the Grunts from a lore perspective as well. And that's going to kind of frame our entire discussion today because it does all revolve around the Hand.
Well, it absolutely does, Jesse. So it's going to be kind of a different format. We're not really going to get into first appearances and things like that. Of course, Frank Miller would kind of bring the Hand into Marvel Comics while he reinvigorated Daredevil. And he also is the creator of Elektra, who we will be talking about next episode.
That guy's done a lot.
And he's done a lot for our boy, Matt.
That's right.
I mean, Daredevil would be just a completely different character than what he is today without Frank Miller, and I'm very thankful for that as a Daredevil enthusiast. So, the Hand. The Hand has been around for 800 years or so now. It was founded in feudal Japan. It was founded as a tool for the authoritarian samurai It would eventually become, for a limited time, kind of a, you know, mountains resistance ninja for the people type thing. But then the evil Snake Root clan would worm their way into power, take over, and turn the hand into these immortal ninjas.
Immortal. Keyword.
That's what they are. They are kind of zombies. They've got the power to kill you and then bring you right back without any will of your own. Tough way to go.
Yeah, tough way to go. And then now you're part of the hand.
Now, the entity that gives the hand this power is their... It's kind of a mix between liege lord, daimyo, and god. But he is, of course, the Beast. And he is a very powerful demon in the Marvel universe. And of course, the Marvel demon is a little different from the Western idea, you know, kind of Christian idea of what a demon is. It's from the underworld, yes, powerful, yes, but there are, what do you want? I guess more rules and just maybe not as bent on evil, more bent on an idea. And this one is kind of the hand ruling, you know, everything. Of course, they're just very power hungry. Of course, the hand would persist through the centuries, but in modern times, what we really want to kind of talk about is their counterparts, and that is the Chaste. The Chaste is a group of highly trained, highly skilled, or powered individuals that oppose the hand, and the Chaste are led by Stick, who we have discussed before. Stick raised and trained a Daredevil after Matt's father's death. Stick had a large hand in training Elektra, just a very powerful kind of mentor figure in the Marvel universe, in the Daredevil kind of mythos. So this kind of brings us to modern times, of course, or modern comic history. Of course, we have the Hand and we have Daredevil in Hell's Kitchen, who is loosely affiliated with Stick. The Hand is very much one of his principal enemies. You have Elektra, his love interest that has been killed by Bullseye, been brought back as a servant of the Hand, an assassin of the Hand, eventual leader of the Hand, now back under her actual own autonomy. And the Hand eventually offers leadership post Elektra, when Elektra leaves, to Daredevil. And after a lot of soul searching and rigmarole, Matt will accept the role of leader of the Hand, the role as leader of the Hand. And his goal would be to use the Hand for good.
Change it from top down.
Within. Yeah. Change it from within. So, of course, there's more to the Hand than Matt thinks.
You're right.
He doesn't realize that at the core of this is the Beast, and the Beast has no goal but power. And his means of achieving that power is through kind of causing chaos, causing absolute, literally anarchy in the streets, just for some reason as he gains power, some kind of, I don't know, vibes, man, that he puts off kind of just make people upset and kind of put his influence over them. And so here we are. Matt Murdock has accepted the leadership of the Hand, and this is fresh off the heels of Bullseye leveling an entire city block in New York. On top of this city block, Daimyo Daredevil would erect a Japanese-style castle called Shadowland. This would be the seat of his power, and Hell's Kitchen was now under the protection and authority of the Hand. Police are driven out, government driven out. There are now immortal, undead ninjas lurking in every shadow.
Wow. And Matt's fully under the control of the Beast now.
No, not quite. With the killing of Bullseye, that began the Beast really taking over Matt.
Yep.
And with every decision that Matt makes, putting him kind of at odds with really American ideals, just falling into pure authoritarianism. I mean, despot, really. We're talking absolute capital punishment for minor offenses, holding entire, you know, subterranean castles worth of people prisoner for no reason other than maybe they were a cop or maybe there were a reporter that asked too many questions. Just, you know, pure authoritarianism, iron hand. And as the beast slowly takes over Matt's body, of course, all of his decisions are clouded by the beast at this point. So as he distances himself from other New York heroes and his friends, surrounds himself with new lieutenants, Black Tarantula, White Tiger, he would push Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Colleen Wing, you know, his defenders cohorts, actively pushes them away, actively pushes away Foggy Nelson, and just sinks into this role. He's not even living as Matt Murdock anymore. He is Lord Daredevil almost exclusively. And so due to this and the superpower or supernatural kind of state of this, you're going to start getting a lot of interest in taking Matt down. At the center of this, we're going to have Luke Cage. We're going to have Iron Fist. We're going to have the Kingpin, Misty Knight, Moon Knight, a lot of kind of cameo appearances in this one. But at the end of the day, really, Elektra is going to kind of save the day here. She's going to double agent, get on the inside, and open it up for the heroes to confront the Beast, who is now fully in control. And, of course, it's all going to work out in favor of our heroes. But really, the bottom line is about this is the hand's kind of cool, man. Mystic, undead ninjas, really cool aesthetic.
Been working from the shadows for nearly 1,000 years.
Yeah. You know, these are all concepts that kind of appeal to me, other than the authoritarianism part, you know, and just kind of pure evil part. I also wouldn't want to be raised from the dead to serve them. Not one bit.
Yeah, you lose a lot of your autonomy and you just become the part of the hand as like a hive. It's like a hive unit. You know,
it really, really is,
which is kind of what happens to Murdoch in the storyline, of course. You know,
the way to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Right.
When you start making compromises, thinking of the greater good is going to outweigh these. It's hard to do from a superhero perspective because it's a great way for writers to just slip in all these bad things.
Yeah.
And the hand is definitely one of those bad things. The beast is definitely one of those bad things. Daredevil as the Beast. Very interesting. The Beast will enhance Matt's strength, speed, senses, everything. He's a metahuman once the Beast takes over. Absolute no remorse, purely focused on his goal. No semblance of caring whatsoever anymore. Just power. So if you do want to check out Shadowland, I would recommend looking up a reading list, maybe on Wikipedia or something of the sort. But I'm not sure that I would really, truly recommend it, though, Jesse.
Okay.
Like I said, it's a very cool concept. There's some very cool things that happen. I really do enjoy getting some time with some more minor characters like Black Tarantula, like Paladin, Shadow Knight, the Shroud, a Silver Sable makes an appearance. This is cool stuff, right? We even get some Juggernaut in here. Pretty cool. Wow. I always love Elektra. This is all good stuff, but it's really just not that fun to read. Despite all these cool concepts and everything, the pacing, the dialogue, the actual developments within these kind of one shots, or they just don't feel very consequential. And it's very, a little overly melodramatic for me. Maybe a little more action. I don't know. I have to digest a little more.
Do you have a recommendation, Chris?
For the Beast?
Yeah, or just the hand in general.
Oh, for the hand in general? Just read Frank Miller's Daredevil, baby.
That's right. And see how just basically he established the hand in the ethos of Marvel.
Not just this, but like the entire Daredevil mythos. If you have listened to any of these Daredevil-centric episodes, and that kind of, that's kind of what, Kingpin, Daredevil himself,
Shadowlands,
Luke Cage to a minor extent.
Soon to be Elektra.
Oh, Elektra's coming up. Bullseye. Big time Bullseye.
Yep. All past episodes of the show, yeah, you can dive into.
Yes.
Yeah.
These are all going to be really explored and fleshed out in Frank Miller's Daredevil run. And from there, there's not really many bad Daredevil runs.
Right.
Bendis and Maleev is awesome.
Yeah.
Charles Soule run of recent is very cool. Chip Zdarsky, one of my favorite writers, maybe my favorite comic book writer at the moment.
We've talked about it a lot.
But yeah, his Daredevil run, I have just waxed poetic about on this podcast. It's a must read. So
okay,
there's a lot of great Daredevil content out there.
Yep.
That I would recommend you read before you get to this one. Just saying.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, Chris, what I like about this storyline and the Beast, and you said this sort of good intentions paving the way to damnation sort of thing, is these are concepts that have always been part of Matt Murdock's character, which is why we love him so much.
Oh, yeah. And he's always a tragic figure, right?
Well, and, yeah, and he is, and he truly is so moral. We talked about this pillar of his, but he struggles with this sort of Batman idea, right? This sort of like going too far with the bad guys, you know? But then he's got this like inner moral compass and his, the way he truly is and his Catholicism, all these things he has. And then he's got his street level actions that he does. And he's always trying to balance them. Let's also not forget, pillar of his character is his day job, you know, which is like repping the little guy, like being a great lawyer, but also that there's a lot of that questions in that too.
That also, you know, brings me to the worst part of the whole Daredevil mythos, and that's Foggy Nelson. That dude's so annoying, man. But yeah, there's a lot of ground that Daredevil broke, and he's super popular, I think, because he's kind of the Punisher, but just like on the side of good, just over that line, right? He kind of skirts the line between taking it too far, judge, jury, and executioner, being overly violent.
We did talk about it in our first episode, Chris, I think.
Yeah, man. He does these things. He is that.
You said he's adult. Like when Stan Lee was coming up with the concepts for him, I mean, the starting ground was, what does adult Spider-Man look like? And it kind of puts us in that situation where maybe he is some sort of midpoint between Spider-Man and the Punisher, you know?
Bingo.
And that's kind of why we love him, because those are all three great characters for different reasons. But, you know, Peter Parker, that moral compass is a big part of his mindset, right? But
oh, yeah.
Peter Parker always kind of holds the last punch back, right? And
Daredevil does not.
Punisher definitely does not hold any punches. So.
This storyline begins with Matt Murdock offing Bullseye. I mean, straight murder on television, live television.
But what I'm saying is this stuff is interesting because we know his heart, because we know his day job, because we know his faith, because we know all these things about him that he's very passionate about and not fake about, right? That are inside. But then when he at night, when he's battling these bad guys and saving people, sometimes he has to go really far to save people. And you said it starts kind of treading in that gray area when he doesn't morally want to be there.
I think that's when Daredevil stories are at their best. I think that's what the character does best. And that, and just, I mean, like I said earlier, Matt Murdock is a tragic figure. He is the tragic figure. I mean, nothing's going to go right for him, you know, no matter what he does, something is about it is going to go wrong. Yeah. It's just what's going to happen, man. It's just what's going to happen. And I mean, that's kind of comics, but also that's Daredevil, baby.
It is comics, right? But it's more Daredevil because it's pivotal to his character and the struggle, right? Because it's not so much about him losing and getting back up and winning eventually like other comic book characters. It's about dark stuff on top of that cycle, the superhero cycle, right? Of losing and then winning and losing. So yeah, very interesting. Closing out our lore today. We don't have appearance of the Beast in the MCU yet, even though there's a lot of hints to it in the Daredevil show. Very interesting. But the hand is very prolific, major part of the Daredevil show, executed quite well.
I thought
kind of amazing that they did so well with that. And they kind of showed like the street level connections to the hand, and then they bring it forward and they actually bring the ninjas on screen later. Big part of Elektra's story in that show. Very good. Watch it, especially with Daredevil Reborn coming next year.
Oh man.
Time to rewatch the Netflix Daredevil show to get ready for that. But yeah, it's cool they could even do this and it not be cheesy. You know what I mean, Chris? I guess it's the way to say the hand, you know, like on screen.
Well, that Netflix Daredevil show really was just kind of an anomaly all around, though. It did so many things well.
I know. For such a low budget.
I know. I mean, it almost makes you wonder if the Disney Plus shows could do with a lower budget.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of rein in the
crutches
of effects and, you know, just have an amazing.
You have to tell a better story when you're not saying like, oh, let's throw this in because it looks cool because we can't.
Right. And that's how you get creative things like in Daredevil, you know, very beginning, that one long shot hallway take where he's battling all the guys with his grit and saving the child, and it's one long shot, and you know, and there, and it's the, that was all rehearsal, And that was all the camera guys, you know? So it's like, you don't need budgets for those things, but you do need a lot of time and dedication and a lot more prep. So yeah, it's an anomaly. I highly recommend it. We have talked about our Daredevil episode. I'll talk about it again during Electra one more time, but yeah, I think we got to get into some Shadowland strategy today, because Chris, we're doing three things today in strategy. We're doing Shadowland Daredevil, the Hand Ninjas, and a new leadership Shadow War. So let's go. So Chris, we're going to start off with Shadowland Daredevil. His name is Shadowland Daredevil. His alter ego is Matt Murdock. On his healthy side, he has a stamina of 6. He's a small base with a medium move, so normal movement, height of 2 and a threat cost of 4. His defenses are 4 physical, 3 energy, and 3 mystic. On his injured side, his health goes up to 7 because now you've made the beast angry. He's got a health of, you know, 13. And I will read one of his superpowers while we're here. It's radar sense. It's innate. When defending against physical or energy attacks, this character adds blanks in its defense rolls to its total successes. No range restriction. This is not martial artist. This is Matt's radar sense. So that makes that 4-3-3 more interesting, Chris.
He's tough to bring down.
He is.
Being able to do that with at any range is just kind of nuts, but makes sense. And it helps justify that 4 threat cost.
Absolutely. And I will mention, when he flips to his backside, props to AMG on the flavor. His health does go up, but his defenses change slightly. They go to 3 physical, 3 energy, 4 mystic, because that beast is in full control. So yeah, his radar sense gets worse for his physical and energy attacks, but his mystic, which can't use the radar sense, goes up. So it's kind of like a net positive.
Jesse, it's time to talk about his attacks. His first attack is a physical attack. It is coordinated strike, range of 2, strength of 5, power cost of 0. After this attack is resolved, Shadowland Daredevil gains power equal to the damage dealt. After this attack is resolved, if there is not an allied Hand Ninjas character in play, place it in play within range 1 of Shadowland Daredevil with an activated token. It is part of your squad.
Very cool. A standard strike, range 2, 5 dice is good. We know 5 dice is good on strikes, but range 2 is tough sometimes. But the upside on this is so cool, Chris, because you just get to put the grunts in play for free, because this is a free attack. We're going to be looking at all this stuff going forward on the show, because this is our first instance of grunts, but how the grunts come into play is very interesting and different from character to character. And it kind of matters, because if you're not doing said thing to bring in the grunts, they're just not in the game and you're not getting your threat value out of them, because it seems like a lot of these leaders with grunts are typically not quite worth their threat on their printed card if they didn't have grunts, you know, but they do have grunts, so they're definitely worth their threat. So you've got to get the grunts out doing stuff. So with Daredevil, you just have to do some strikes to get it. That also means, though, if he can't get in the range too, he can't get him out if they've gone away. So something to think about. But a way that's going to help you get around that, he has a physical attack called Baton Snare, just like our classic Daredevil. It's range 4, strength of 4, power cost of 0. This stack ignores line of sight, and the defending character does not benefit from cover because these batons go right around those corners. And it has a trigger of pursuit. No wild or anything, just happens before damage is dealt. Before damage has gone on the enemy character, Matt Murdock may advance short towards the targeting character. So this helps a lot. Not a great attack, but is nice at range 4. And it just helps him a lot because he doesn't have a charge. He doesn't have fast movement, you know. So this gets you back on points and stuff.
I love an attack with movement attached. I've always loved attacks with movement attached. And especially not having to trigger with a wild or anything is very nice.
Yeah, you're just going to do this a lot of the time, Chris, to move.
Right.
That's all you care about.
Exactly.
And then if you get some damage on top of that, you're happy.
Exactly. It'd be nice if it built some power, but you know, what can you do?
I think you'd be doing this even more than the strike if that was the case, potentially. But
good
yeah.
Point. Good point.
Yeah.
Let's talk about his last attack, and that is Demon's Devastation. It is also a physical attack. Range 2, strength 7, power cost of 3. If an allied Hand Ninja's character is within range 2 of the target character, add 2 dice to the attack roll. On a wild, you will trigger Vanish. After this attack is resolved, place this character within range 2.
Very cool.
A lot of dice.
Good spender. Yeah. We'll remove all pretense here, Chris. This is the only way Daredevil has to spend power on his card. So this is actually a spender you are going to do a lot. You know, we always recommend on the show, don't do spenders too much, but this is one you are going to do a lot, because anytime you have 3-6 power, whatever, you know, you're going to try to do this and just get rid of your power and do a big attack. I mean, 9 dice is a lot. The ninjas are out. And keep in mind, the ninjas don't have to be within 2 of Daredevil. They just have to be within 2 of the target. So they could be like on the backside of your target, like on the flank, and you could be on the front side of the target, right? And you're both range 2 of the target. Just think of it like in that sort of way. So as long as they're within 2 as well, it's just getting like 2 free additional dice. So this is really good with coordinated strike. If the ninjas aren't out, you can strike, hopefully build some power, place the ninjas within 2 of the target, hopefully. Should be no problem because you're range 2 of the target, and then pay for Demon's Devastation. They're already in place to proc your Demon's Devastation, give you that 9 dice, and hopefully daze a model. Hopefully. I don't think you want to do this with somebody's like full health, because if they live, they just took a lot of damage and they've got a lot of power. And what's interesting is this changes on the back, and we'll get to that.
Yeah. So let's get into his leadership. Shadow War. And it is a criminal syndicate affiliated leadership. When an allied character attacks an enemy character holding or contesting an objective, it may reroll 1 of its attack dice. This leadership ability can reroll skull results. Getting extra dice against
people playing the game.
Yeah, people playing the game. I was well said. Yeah, man, that's pretty cool.
Because if your opponent's not playing the game, yeah, you're not getting this leadership, but you're winning on points every round. So they're slowly bleeding themselves out points-wise. So yeah, rerolling skulls is insane because this makes dice consistency so much better for this faction. And I will mention, Chris, while we're here, for us and the listener at home, keep in mind, even pay to flips, this counts, because when you're next to a pay to flip, you're still contesting it, right? Even though it's not like a one you have to sit by and secure, you have to pay to flip it.
Oh, I see.
You're still next to it. So this works on every objective, essentially. So. Wow. Just keep that in mind. So yeah, this is X-Force leadership that's contingent, but since it is contingent, you can do it twice instead of once for X-Force, which the once for X-Force is guaranteed, but the ceiling on this is higher.
Once every attack.
Yeah, so if you attack twice in a turn.
If you attack 4 times in a turn.
Yeah, if your name's Bucky Barnes. Yeah. Yeah. So very consistent dice on this team. And very cool because, you know, we talked about this when this was previewed, Chris, and we got pretty excited because this is nothing like the Kingpin leadership. And when they release leaderships like this, it really does making that mono affiliated team with 2 leaders very viable and very fun. And you get to decide, who am I bringing as my leader? Is it going to be Kingpin? Is it going to be Shadowland Daredevil? Is it going to be both? And I versatile strategy and swap in mid game between leaderships. This is the world I want to live in with X-Men in the future. You know, this really is the world.
That's coming.
So I just love this so much. But let's close out his card. He has Radar Sense, which I mentioned. He counts all blanks on his physical and energy defense against attacks. A lot of consistency on his dice because he's counting more sides positively. But it gets better, Chris. He has Stealth. Characters must be within range 3 of Shadow and Daredevil to target him with attacks. And then he has Wall Crawler because, of course, he does. He's Daredevil. We already mentioned he's not very fast, but being a medium movement and ignoring terrain helps a lot. It helps a lot. So yeah, he's not a long mover. Yeah, he doesn't have a charge. He's a little bit slow, but he can get up on buildings, get into cover. He can laterally move over stuff and escape with objectives. He can do stuff that other characters can't do, right? Which is good.
And he's got grunts.
Yeah.
He's got a whole nother activate. Like,
yeah, he's got a little
whole nother character activation attached to him, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's huge. And
I think the stealth is huge because I think I've talked about it a lot on the show, but I'll continue to talk about it because I feel like we've learned more as the game's gone on. Stealth is one of the best defensive techs in the game.
Truth.
You literally cannot be attacked unless people come inside your stealth range. So it's not like, oh, I got a big defense dice pool and I can add cap shield on it. Like, that is defensive tech. That's great. But that's still contingent on rolling dice. When you play stealth characters, if you're making people come to you, since you're doing that, they're losing an action that could be attacking you from range because they're coming to you and losing an action. So it's giving you the best defensive tech, period, because they have to come to you, they get less attacks, and then you can also move away and get in stealth range again if you need to, right? This is why Black Cat's so good, because she has stealth. Like, if she has stealth,
is that why?
Well, she has a couple things.
Is that why Black Cat's so good?
this is not a crash on Black Cat's Parade podcast because she wonderfully designed lore wise by the character. But yeah, it's she has long move with stealth, which means that she can get away. She can just get away. Well, and then you chase her and you only get one attack on her, right? Because you got into her stealth range. But then next turn, she long moves again. So Matt's a slower version of that. But I just love that he's sitting in stealth. And then when you come inside his range, now he can baton snare you, move short, and then he can strike you. Like, but you had to do all that to get to him.
Exactly. It's just incremental wins. It's small value wins throughout the game that add up to winning in round four.
Yeah, and that's how you win the game. And that's certainly how you'd win the game at competitive events against more competitive players, right? Is making those decisions, placing those characters at those places that need to be utilizing their abilities in the best possible way. But closing out Matt's card on his backside, his Demon's Devastation changes, which is cool.
Yes, I think this is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, Chris just kind of nailed this in lore. It changes from physical to mystic. So it goes from 7 physical to 7 mystic, which of course is buffed up to 9 mystic respectively if the ninjas are within 2 of the target, just like before. But he also gets a new superpower. We talked about on his front side, he doesn't really have a way to spend power, so you might as well do your spender as much as possible. He has, there's only the beast. It's an active superpower, costs 3 power, very expensive, but very cool. The next time the Demon's Devastation attack is used, this activation, its range becomes A2 instead of range 2. So now you're doing potentially a 9 dice A2 area.
But not only that, if you're on top of an OBJ, because how else are you going to be able to get everyone to be in a little little area 2 for you?
Yeah.
You're going to get a reroll on every single one of those 9 dice pools. That's disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
And it's mystic too, Chris. So like it could get better or worse depending on your matchup. So like Demon's Devastation could be better in your front side against a team that has low physical defense, then use it more on its front side. But then when he switches to his backside, maybe they got good mystic defense. Don't use it as much. It could be completely flipped, that scenario. It could be depending on your matchup. So like for instance, Demon's Devastation against a Web Warrior team, not very good on the front side. On the backside, very good against a Web Warrior team. They do not like mystic attacks. So I find this very cool that the beast is kind of coming alive and really showing his presence. And yeah, you're spending 6 power to do it this way. But if you got flipped to your backside, you're going to have 6 power. And you have nothing else to spend it on.
Moreover, you're going to do this maybe once a game.
Sure.
Wait, yeah. There is only the beast into Demon's Devastation. It's just, you're not going to be doing it that often. So if you have the opportunity to do it,
yeah,
just do it. Don't think about it. Do it.
Just do it. But it's funny too, the ninjas, like there is some like high level play there too, where they have to be within 2 of the targets, right? So like maybe some of your targets, you only will get 7 dice. And then the other half, you will get the 9, depending on where the ninjas are at with the circle where everyone's falling. But yeah, if the ninjas are right next to you, not right next to Matt, you're probably getting this 9 dice on everybody. So interesting stuff. But Chris, we got to move on to the hand ninjas because we haven't even talked about them yet. And, you know, they are a big part of his kit. The name of the hand ninjas are hand ninjas. They are grunt characters. So all the grunt rules apply to them. They have a stamina of 2, a move of medium on a medium sized base. So they're very fast, a height of 2. Their defenses are 1 physical, 1 energy, and 2 mystic, which I really like. That they got a little bit of mystic buff, just cool. Let's talk about their attack. It's a physical attack called Ninja Weapons, range 2, strength of 4, power cost of 0, because, of course, grunts don't gain power, so they have no ways to spend power. It has a trigger of bleed, but it's 2 wilds, so unlikely. Yeah, I love it too.
I love everything about these things. I love this whole concept.
Just 4 dice, you pray you get 2 wilds to give them bleed, but if not, you got a almost free 4 dice attack, is a way to think about it.
It's pretty close to free.
And I got to talk about their 2 superpowers while we're here because it'll make more sense with Matt's kit. So we're going to talk about Ninja Ambush first. It's a innate power. When the hand ninja is placed onto the battlefield as a result of the Coordinated Strike or Ancient Throwing Blade's special rules. So Coordinated Strike is Matt's strike. Ancient Throwing Blades is Electra's strike. So when they're placed out from the strike, which we just talked about on Matt's card, the hand ninja may make an attack. So even when they're getting put out, Chris, with that activated token, they get 1 attack. This just makes Matt's kit even better. because I was talking about how paramount it was earlier to get them out for free, because that's just such a net positive. Well, it's an even more net positive now because they get a free attack too, and you're getting them out for free. So you want to be striking a lot with Matt to get these guys out and get them to do stuff. And same with Elektra.
Well, that's good news because I love throwing dice.
Yeah, and what's not to love about just a bunch of little four dice katana rolls that could get bleed, maybe, but also get a reroll under Matt's leadership. So it's really five exactly. dice.
So they have one active superpower. It is called Ninja Vanish. It is a power cost of zero, of course, because they can neither gain nor spend power. This action is move one asset or civilian token being held by this character to another allied character within range 3. The allied character is now holding that token. A character cannot hold more tokens than allowed by the crisis due to this superpower. Then this character is KO'd.
Ninja Vanish. That's right.
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
Just run, yeah, run up, grab it, and pass it off to who you want to have it. So cool.
Yeah, it's really powerful. It's a really powerful turn one play because you can pick up a hammer with the ninjas, throw it back to Bullseye or Winter Soldier or Matt Murdock, and then you can double move Matt, and then they vanish, they go away, and then you can double move Matt Murdock to a secure, right? And you just kind of got like double action economy in a way because you went with two characters, yes, and nested in one activation, but you got an extract and you got to a secure. And that's what we want to do turn one. You know, we want to do as much of that as possible and keep parity with our opponent or be up one or two than our opponent. And this helps you do that potentially, which is really great.
I agree. I think it's an amazing tactic, but I think we have to finish the hand ninjas off here. I think we got to go ahead and make them vanish by talking about their last power, and that is the innate superpower, the hand. The hand ninjas cannot contest secure objective tokens. The hand ninjas do not have to pay power when interacting with civilian or asset tokens. So no secures. They interact with the extracts for free, of course, because that's all they can do is for free. So,
yeah,
you know, little bit of a price to pay there, but it's in line with what we've seen with other grunts. So, and the Hydra grunts are the opposite of this, I believe.
Right. They can't touch extracts, but they can sit by secure. So we are seeing sort of this interplay with grunts where they can't spend power at all. They don't have good attacks, but they do one cool thing with either extracts or now the Hydra troops secures. So I find that very cool. And closing out their card, they have the innate superpower grunts, and then you, of course, have their parent characters that they go with and only with. So it's either Elektra or Shadowland Daredevil. So keep in mind, you're never going to use these ninjas outside of said characters. I find that very cool. I still find that a very elegant solution that AMG chose to not have this game be flooded by low threat characters like a hand ninja, like a shield agent. Because I could just totally see somebody running a list like, oh, here's my list. I've got hand ninjas. I've got shield agents. I've got Hydra troops, and then I've got affiliated characters to make my team, you know, and they just completely dodge that bullet. Very smart. But yeah, Chris, I think the big cool thing these guys do is they come out and make a free attack when Matt or Elektra bring them out. Shield is not like that. Shield doesn't have the free attacks. And they also have this ninja vanish where they just get to throw something back to a safer spot. Very cool.
I love them. I seriously, I do.
We'll talk to shield agents in the future and kind of how they mirror these and do also different things than these. And I find it very cool that we've got both in the game. And yeah, respect that too, Mystic Defense, because they could crit out and just not die if you're talking about the Mystic Attack. And that's harrowing because these characters, the longer they're out in the game, the more free actions they get on a character that didn't really exist, right? That's whittling you down in a different way. In a way of winning the game, as Chris said earlier, it's just little decisions and little actions that, you know, the Elektra or Shadowland Daredevil player are kind of getting. There's kind of like they're getting four actions a turn because if you leave them up, it comes back around to their turn, they will be unactivated and they will get to go before Matt. So we're not even worried about the free attack then because we're just going to perform two attacks with them, or we're going to move them and perform a free attack on a lower threat character. And then Matt's going to go and take his two actions. Because keep in mind, grunts always have to go before their parent, always have to take their two actions for the parent, and then the parent takes their two actions. So also, as you, the player that's playing them, be careful because they could just be free power for your opponent. You know, your opponent's got good killing characters. don't put these in front of Laura Kinney. She's just going to eat them and trigger frenzy, right?
Yes.
So I love the interplay with the grunts, and I find it so cool. And yeah, I just love that they are adding something new to the game. And talking about something new to the game, we talked about this new leadership. We will talk about one tactics card, Shuriken Arashi. So this is a card that can be used during Shadowland Daredevil's turn. Shuriken Arashi, it's a unaffiliated active card. During Shadowland Daredevil's activation, he may spend 2 power to play this card. If there's an allied hand ninja character within 2 of Shadowland Daredevil, Shadowland Daredevil may use the Shuriken Arashi attack shown above once this activation. Range, cover, and line of sight are measured from the hand ninjas instead of Shadowland Daredevil. So very cool. Get yourself a little bit more range. Keep in mind, hand ninjas are a medium-sized base, so you are getting more range off of this attack. It's a physical attack, a range of 3, strength of 10, power cost of 0. Before creating the dice pool for this attack, the target character may advance short. Very interesting. Then, if the target character is benefiting from cover from this attack rolls 5 fewer attack dice. After the attack is resolved, remove all allied hand ninjas from the battlefield. So this is a big attack, right? But you've got to get it right.
That's a lot of dice.
This is a perfect card for our kitchen table games and our fun games at home, because it's just a lot of dice. And presumably, Chris, you went with the ninjas 2 actions before this, maybe perform 2 attacks, and then maybe you performed 1 attack or 1 move with Shadowland, and then you performed this attack with Shadowland. So yeah, that's just a lot of attacks that one turn. Very cool. The problem is they get to advance.
They get to choose where they move, so it's a little tough.
But here's the thing. If you're like base to base, you're range 2, they can't get away.
And oh, they probably you're not going to play this from range 3. You have to be up close and personal. Yeah.
Yeah, that's too risky. Yeah. So yeah, it's a little bit of a gamble. It's probably we don't see it as much, but it is very fun. But Chris, that's all we're going to read for tactics cards today, because we have more on our Electra episode coming up. But we're going to talk about the Criminal Syndicate here for a little bit, as in the Shadow War Criminal Syndicate, or as we lovingly refer to it in the community, as Shadowlands Criminal Syndicate. This is a very different team from Kingpin's team. Kingpin wants tanky, big characters that can't be moved off points, obviously, because they count as 2, and some lower threat characters to splash and to have, like Bullseye, to kind of fill out your team and set up more points. Though Daredevil does definitely want Bullseye, which I find very interesting lore-wise on his team, doesn't really want tanky guys on his team. He wants characters that perform a lot of attacks and get use of these rerolls, right?
Oh, so are you implying that rapid fire is real good here?
It's real good here, as in it's always real good in the game, and it's just better in his team, frankly, because every rapid fire attack could potentially go up 1 more dice, depending on what your opponent's doing on the map. And we know not all characters get to automatically do their rapid fires. A lot of them need hits to perform the next rapid fire. So this not only helps get more dice into your opponent, but also helps you get off more rapid fires in general.
Not so bad.
It's not bad. Getting rid of skulls too. Like, you're like, I've got 1 dice that I could reroll, but it's a skull. Well, I can fix that in this team and do more damage potentially.
It just offers a level of consistency that you don't see with every team, especially when it comes to building power and getting damage in. While I don't know that I would consider this really an attrition team, they definitely do have potential to put out big damage.
They are an attrition team, but maybe not in the way probably what you're thinking. You're thinking like
table the enemy force, yeah.
With a taller team, probably.
This is
like a wide attrition team, which is very scary. Because Shadowlands Daredevil is 4 threat. You're going to want to bring mainly 3 threats in this team. And I find that interesting. It's one of those 3 threat swarm teams in a way. You've got some 2s as well. And yeah, Bullseye, he's really good in this team because he's affiliated and he works with it. But also, Chris, you've got characters like Hood. I don't want to talk about Hood. That just get way better in this team because he has a mystic.
Oh, really? Hood gets way better. Neat.
Yeah. He has a mystic rapid fire pistol attack, which is very unique. But then, of course, his demon side, he already hits harder than an average 3 threat on his demon side. So in this team, he hits even harder on his demon side. But I think it's really about him getting his consistent rapid fires on his mystic pistols, because
yes,
he's getting the power to heal more and he's getting just good range attacks. And then when people come into him, he can turn into a demon, potentially daze or KO them, right? Yeah. So those are like some primary characters affiliated with the team. But I know we always talk about splash characters, and this is actually a team I have played a lot of, Chris, and I've tried a lot of splash characters, And there's some really fun ones. And this is a team that gives you a lot of creative liberty. Any three threat or like two threat that you really like that has some good attacks probably works really well in this team. An honorable mention before we get into the three threats and two threats, Killmonger is nuts in this team.
Oh, yeah.
We know how Killmonger is. Sometimes he just blanks out on his dice, even with right. rerolls. So
I play that's Cable. Yes.
Yeah, you play Cable. That's the risk you're taking with Killmonger, but this shores up some of his weaknesses because it gives him one reroll on each attack in the game, which helps him out a lot. And he's criminal, Syndicate. It's just, he's a four threat. And I already said you're going to have less room for four threats, more room for threes and twos because you have a four threat leader and you want to go wide when you can. But some honorable mentions that I really like in this team, Winter Soldier. He's kind of insane in this team. I mean, he's already one of the better characters in the game right now. This is his best home because a rapid fire from range five with rerolls, it's gonna hit the second trigger, right? So that's yes. that's just four attacks on him every turn, potentially, probably. And his is the only rapid fire in the game that's a true strike that builds power, right? So you're also helping him build tons of power thinking that he can hide your tactics and do his plays off of his allies. And also you can do his spender more often because he has more power in this team because of the rerolls on the strike, et cetera, et cetera. I also think he kind of fits the theme in a cool way. Yeah, he's not Shadowlands in the way of comics and stuff, but he is a great rogue agent for this team. Like, as in mechanically in the game, strategy-wise, and also just like the theme kind of works where it's like, yeah, we hired Bucky.
Oh, yeah, it's all assassins.
Yeah, and he's affiliated with Shadowlands. He's helping me get my affiliation. And we got all these assassins that just are rolling a bunch of dice at you from distance. Yeah, so that's honorable mention number one. Honorable mention number two, Chris, is X-23.
Well, of course.
I mean, we've sang her praises on the show a lot.
They're a fighty list. She's mm-hmm. the fightiest of fighting threes. Why wouldn't you bring her?
She already has one reroll on herself.
Oh, yeah. Dude, now she's nuts in X-Force alone just from the from
oh, gosh.
The less rerolls, you know? But yeah, in this affiliation, if she's getting a reroll, I mean, obviously, you've got to be targeting people on objectives or holding tokens for these rerolls that we are so generously handing out here. We're making it sound like you get them constantly, but please understand that is not the case. You should be picking crises that are going to help you get rerolls as much as possible. It's kind of what we're getting at here. But if you successfully do that, there's not many threes that are going to be better than Laura in that kind of list. Just there's just not.
No. And like her frenzy also can potentially get more rerolls because she's getting a free out of action attack, right? So like,
yeah, it's every attack.
It's,
you have
yes,
the potential to get that reroll. It doesn't matter if it's an out of action attack, in action attack, if it's extra or a triggered attack, it doesn't matter. If it says it's an attack, you can potentially reroll it with this Shadowland affiliation.
Right. Also remember too, that she doesn't like skulls and this helps her get around her skulls
that
too.
This mitigates that. Yep.
Yeah, her assassin training, this gets around that too. So yeah, she's getting two rerolls every attack, presumably, and if you're attacking the right targets. Absolutely huge. And just makes her consistent. And I think most of the characters you want in this team are rapid fire ranged characters. So it is interesting. I mentioned Laura because she is a shorter range character, and that's kind of showcases her powers with the frenzy, with the healing factor, and why you're just taking her with this range two attack mainly and her range three on the spender, because her other things shore up the weaknesses of her not having rapid fire and longer range attacks and stuff. But closing out with a couple more range attacks, I say range three or further is what I would consider range attack in this game. Medusa is really good in this team, Chris, because she gets a reroll on herself already. Give her another reroll. She can trigger more flurries. She can trigger more pushes, right? It's just better for her and getting her engine going. Very cool that Medusa can fit that mold.
Can I just say something real quick?
Yeah.
Medusa's still really good. That's all.
I know.
She's still really good. I understand she got nerfed.
Amazing character.
I understand that a character post-nerf, the immediate reaction is, oh, nerf, trash. No, she's still awesome. Still player. That's it. I'm done.
Now, she's great. And she kind of shores up some of their lack of control because this team does have a big weakness. They don't really have control. You're just rolling raw dice. And so maybe that means early game you're not going to do as much, but then mid-game, late-game, you're going to swing hard and just clear the table, right? That's kind of how teams like this work, being an attrition team. But yeah, keeping the ranged attack thing going, we already mentioned they're bringing Bullseye. If you're bringing a second two threat, strongly consider Rocket, because Rocket with a five dice attack with a reroll, making it six for a two threat.
And it's an energy attack.
I know. And you force your opponent to deal with him, which they don't really want to do. They want to come to his booby trap range. They want to prioritize higher threat targets. And Rocket's just sitting back there sniping. And it is very cool. And once again, kind of that hired assassins, hired mercenaries theme of this team, you know, working good with point. The hands. It's fun. It's really fun. And closing out our hired assassins, fun splash characters discussion, Punisher. Now, Chris, you and I have played some games. I played Punisher in this team a long time ago, had a lot of fun. I think he's as good as he was then, if not better, with these pieces around him. But something I will mention, Punisher's rapid fire does not need a hit to trigger. It just happens. So his rapid fire is just happening. So he's always getting four attacks if he wants it.
He's pretty good right now, too.
He does have Mystique's blow up terrain, deal auto damage to you. We know how good it is on Mystique. He's also got his from range sniper attack with a reroll. It's already 10 dice. So
stupid.
Top it all off, he has synergy with this leadership because when you kill the ninjas, he gets a punishment token, right?
Oh, man.
Just so too then you're much, like, yeah, you're like, should I kill synergy. The ninjas? Yeah, should I kill them? Well, thank goodness he doesn't have the synergy of he can never be affiliated and he can never benefit from affiliated cards. So that's kind of part of it, right? Like a full circle. His weakness, his one weakness, and why we don't see much of him in the game continually, right? Is he Truth. Just doesn't have that stuff. But I find it fun because this is a gunline team, gunline attrition team, as opposed to like my current love, which is the gunline shield team, which is not attrition, it's defensive. So I find this just fun, and we're going to dive more into this leadership as we get further along the series, but those are some honorable mentions at the top. Kind of frame your ideas of like who to bring on these teams. And I mentioned Mystique because she's just as good as Punisher. She also has access to deception. She has rapid fires. She's a long mover with stealth. I mean, she fits right in this team as well. She's great. But notice what I'm saying, Chris. This team's one of those weird teams in the game where you feel comfortable splashing a lot of characters because you don't really care about your tactics cards as much. You care about utilizing the leadership more. So that kind of usurps the tactics cards of the Criminal Syndicate in this team in particular. And you're going to have power in your criminals, hopefully, to use your tactics cards when you're ready. So you're kind of like balancing that feature of the team. And Bucky helps you balance that because he's counts for your team during list building.
Great point. It's always good to have that kind of flexibility when you're splashing so much and relying so much on three threat models. Yeah. You might limit your roster a little bit.
Yeah, and you might bring more generic tactics cards, right? Because you just know I'm gonna have less criminals, but that's kind of my play style with this team that I've chosen. So I'm just gonna kind of have one or two, and then the rest are gonna be good tactics cards or fun named character cards.
Deception, anyone?
Deception, exactly, or something like Blood Red and Personal on Punisher. Something a little harder than Deception, but when it gets off, really fun. So yeah, just start framing your ideas, or we'll just start thinking about the team in that way, and we're gonna continue down this path with more criminals in the future.
Fury's Finest is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Fury's Finest patron by going to patreon.com/Fury's Finest.
Follow the show online. Find us on Twitter at Fury's Finest Cast and Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch at Fury's Finest. Email us at furiesfinest@gmail.com and leave us reviews on your podcast platform of choice. It helps the show grow and expand.
Thanks to Approaching Nirvana for our show's music. And please help spread the word. The game is growing at a rapid pace. Let's get more Fury's Finest heads. I don't know what you guys are called. But no, let's grow the game, man. That's what this podcast is all about. Creating communities, growing the game, loving the lore.
That's right.
So yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, thank you for that, Finest listeners. You can find Chris and I online. You can find me, Jesse, on Twitter and Instagram at Jesse Aiken. That's JSSEAKIN. Chris, where can everyone find you?
Follow me on Twitter at Chris Bruffett, BRUFFETT. Jesse, the NBA training camp is just around the corner, baby.
There it is.
I can't wait.
Well, it was really fun to return to the world of Daredevil, and I'm looking forward to more of it in the future as Me we too. Have more Daredevil adjacent content.
I've got a killer reading recommendation for Elektra next week too. I'm excited.
Can't wait. But until next time, thanks for listening, true believers.
Excelsior.
The world has gotten even stranger than you already know.
At this point, I doubt anything would surprise me.
$10 says you're wrong.